Hello, everyone, and welcome to the IASB podcast. I'm Linda Mizan-Hutter, the Vice Chair of the Accounting Standards Board. And by the way, I'm very lucky today to be joined by Bruce McKenzie. Bruce.
Thank you very much, and it's great to be here. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Bruce McKenzie. I'm fortunate enough to be one of the members of the IASB. And we're here just to talk a bit about our March meeting that we've just completed. It was a nice meeting, short but effective meeting, and the board really discussed time talking about three topics. What we're going to do today in this podcast is really focus on two of those. First one being the post-implementation review of IFRS 16 on leases, and then the second one just continuing some of our discussions on the equity method. So maybe let's start off with the post-implementation review of IFRS 16. Now, just to remind you that a post-implementation review effectively is something we conduct every couple of years after a standard's been in force. The purpose of this is really to see whether a standard is working as intended. But I mean, I always see this a bit as it's a governance step. So it's to let us come back and say, we had a whole of assumptions and things we've done when we issued a standard. Now that it's been in practice for a number of years, is it working as we'd initially thought? Now, obviously, IFRS 16 was issued in, effective 1 January 2019. So people have had quite a lot of time to bed this down in practice. And those are kind of the feedback we're looking for. Is this working as they'd intended? Now, where we are at the moment, firstly, thank you for everybody who sent in feedback. I think it's been good for us to get that feedback from all parts of the world. And obviously, in January this year, we started looking at the feedback and discussing that. Now, in our March meeting, we started making decisions around the feedback that we received and the staff's analysis of that. And we discussed two critical areas generating concern for stakeholders. The first one of those was on the ongoing costs from lessees when applying the measurement principles. And the second one was the usefulness of information from lessees' application of judgment. So, Linda, do you want to take us through the first one?
I'd be happy to do that. You know, because as a former preparer, this is something I always thought about, because typically you expect cost when you're transitioning to a new standard. But what you hope for is that if you do the process well, that the future years of using the new standard are more cost effective. And so what we learned from the feedback that we got was we may have an issue here with IFRS 16. So because many stakeholders actually expressed concerns about how high the ongoing costs of applying the measurement requirements are for the lessees. Many of them said that these costs are significantly higher than expected when developing IFRS 16. And it looks like the concerns are really focused in a couple of key areas. One is the remeasurement of the lease liabilities, and the other is a perennial favorite, determining discount rates, because we often hear about the complexity of determining discount rates. So in thinking about this, the board did take some tentative decisions. So first of all, we wanted to acknowledge the feedback that the ongoing costs for lessees of applying the measurement requirements are higher than the IASB expected when it issued IFRS 16. And we would like to explore in future discussions whether and how we can reduce these costs. So first of all, we decided to add a research project to our pipeline, exploring some cost reduction measures. For example, potentially reducing the frequency of remeasurements of the lease liability, simplifying the requirements for variable lease payments linked to an index or rate, simplifying the requirements for discount rates, and exploring practical release for the discount rate requirements for some remeasurements of the lease liability. So right now, we're focused on those areas, and our tentative view is some of the other cost-related matters, such as recognition exemptions or disclosure requirements, likely won't get considered. But again, I want to say we're midstream and thinking about these things. And one of the things that I like to point out about IFRS 16 that we need to consider, and this is my personal view, is that IFRS 16 is a very conceptually sound standard. It makes perfect sense conceptually. But sometimes when you think about applying it to one or a few leases, that makes sense. But when you have many, many, many leases, as some of our stakeholders do, some of the complexities then just add up. And it's very difficult not only to have a system that helps you with that, but also as the people move through the organization, if you're a preparer, you constantly have to retrain people to make these significant judgments. And I know those are factors that I dealt with when I was a preparer. So Bruce, over to you in terms of the information that users are seeing.
Thanks very much. Now, I mean, to start off with that IFRS 16, obviously, there are a lot of areas where people do need to apply judgments. And I think it's important to point out that when we got the feedback from people, I mean, they accepted that the usefulness of the information resulting from this application of judgment is probably as we expected as the ISB when we issued the standards. So I think that's good news. But I mean, most stakeholders also acknowledge that a lot of these significant judgments are required in three areas: when determining the lease term, incremental borrowing rate, or which variable payments to include in the lease liability. And when you're applying these judgments, obviously there is a risk that we could end up with inconsistent application, which results in reduced comparability between entities. So that can create a bit of a challenge. Now, the board discussed some of the stakeholder suggestions on what we can do to enhance this lease-related information. And having considered all the feedback that we got and the suggestions, and especially the cost and benefits of doing any work on that, we decided not to take any further action in this space. But I think it is important to note that there could potentially be some knock-on effects from what Linda was talking about, in the fact that if we do go through some cost reductions in some of these areas, that could obviously make it easier when people are applying those judgments. And may have a result in information being a bit more comparable. So I wouldn't say we're going to do nothing on this. I think some of it could flow from the cost. So where are we going from here? Well, we're going to continue our discussions as time progresses on some of the other areas. And we're hoping to finalize this PIR in Q3 this year. So keep an eye out for that. When we do, obviously, we will always, as always, publish a project summary and a feedback statement on that.
You know, one thing, though, I thought I'd add to the conversation, Bruce, is one significant message we got from our Accounting Standards Advisory Forum this week, or they met on Monday and Tuesday, is when we add a project to our research pipeline, sometimes it takes us a little while to get to the project. And so the Accounting Standards Advisory Forum members expressed strong concern that we would need to prioritize this project, which will be a subject of a further discussion. So we recognize that we need to deal with the ongoing costs, and we also recognize we're going to have to make some choices about where we put our resources. So please stay tuned. Now, if I turn to the other project we wanted to talk about, it's the equity method. Just to remind you about the project background, the objectives of the project were to reduce the diversity in practice by answering very specific application questions, but also to improve the understandability of the existing standard, IAS 28, Investments in Associates and Joint Ventures. So we published this exposure draft in 2024, and we've been re-deliberating since September 2025. And we have a number of times talked about the project objectives and decided to keep them exactly the same. We're not changing the project objectives, and we're proceeding with the re-deliberation of the exposure draft proposals. So Bruce, let's talk a little bit about this.
Thanks, Linda. Now, I like this project because I think these are areas which have been longstanding. I mean, they're not just things we made up, but they really are issues that for a long time people have asked us for clarity on. And in March this year, we focused on two of those proposals that we put in there. The first one was on other changes in ownership interest, and then the second one was on the purchase of additional interest, whether or not we should provide relief from the proposals in the exposure draft. Now, let's talk about those. On the first one, we looked at the other changes in ownership interest. Now, this is really the issue of what happens when an investor's ownership interest in an associate changes, but you're still retaining significant influence. So maybe just a couple of examples to illustrate. For example, when an associate issues new shares to other shareholders other than the investor, and obviously your interest could be diluted, or even the other way around, if an associate buys back its shares from other shareholders and potentially your ownership increases. So how do you deal with these transactions? Well, the board decided effectively to proceed with what we had put in the exposure draft. And that is that if there's an increase in the ownership interest, you'd account for it as if the change was a purchase. Whereas if there was a decrease in the ownership interest, we'd account for the change as if it was a disposal. Effectively, that means that if there's any gain or loss from this dilution, you're going to put that in profit and loss. I think it is important to notice there were a couple of other things that people asked us to comment on, things like equity-settled share-based payments, or to add a whole lot of other additional illustrative examples, but we decided we weren't going to go ahead and do all of those. Now, second topic looked at potential relief, and Linda, do you want to take us to that?
So when we talk about the notion of accounting for the additional interest or the interest disposed at fair value, we initially proposed that when an investor buys an additional interest in the associate, it should measure it additional interest of the identifiable assets and liabilities at fair value. And immediately what we heard from stakeholders is whenever you do this, this can be costly and it can be complex. And sometimes companies need to hire for help to help them do the fair value allocation. So in November, I'll take you back there for a second. The board decided to confirm the required to measure the additional share of the associates' identifiable assets and liabilities at fair value, but also asked the staff to explore providing relief from this requirement. And this would address the feedback about the cost of applying this proposal while maintaining some good quality information. So in March, we made a decision. Again, this is a tentative decision as we progress through the project, that we would allow companies to use any alternative measure if they could reasonably expect that the alternative wouldn't make a material difference to their financial statements. So what I fully expect is that we will hear something about whether or not this is a reasonable relief, since the preparers are going to have to think about how they quantify that it is it wouldn't have a material difference. That's always an issue. So it's going to be interesting to see how people respond to this notion of our relief.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to point out that, I mean, we don't want to make people have to go and do a fair value exercise unnecessarily. I mean, we appreciate this is costly, and the cost, of course, could be way more than any benefit people get out of it. So I think it's important to point out that this relief we're talking about, firstly, is optional. So we're not going to, if a company wants to go and do the fair value, or if they feel that there's a, it could be very material, they need to go and do it in their minds, they can go and do that. But we're giving you an option to not have to do that. Now, what do we mean by that? What we're saying effectively, as Linda pointed out, that we're saying if this isn't going to be, you're not expecting there to be a material difference between the transaction when you're doing it, the fair value, and maybe potentially how you've accounted for it before or something else you may have, then we don't require you to go and do the fair value exercise. Now, it's important to note we haven't determined, we haven't dictated what alternative method you need to use. That's going to be a matter of judgment. So it could be a previous value, it could be an internal value, whatever it is. But the key thing point is we're not going to make you do it. What we have done to help you is we've given you a whole lot of qualitative factors to help you make that assessment. Now, what's very important to point out is in these qualitative factors, we've made a very big point that you do not need to do a quantitative assessment. I mean, if we're going to make you do a quantitative assessment, you're going to have to do the fair value. So it kind of takes away the relief. But I think it's important to point out that with no alternative being required, no quantitative assessment, this will be an area of judgment. And obviously, companies are going to have to see how they're going to apply that. Next steps on this, we're obviously going to continue redeliberating the rest of the proposals in the exposure draft, and we're going to make a project direction decision probably in the second quarter of 2026.
Now, one more thing. I said we would talk about two topics, but I've got another little soundbite for folks, and this is in particular for those folks who use our specialized standards for small and medium enterprises. So we discussed an issue for this literature coming from the implementation group that we have for this part of our literature. And it's about a consolidation exemption. And the nub of the issue is that while we had provided relief in our so-called big book of full IFRS that listed companies use, we neglected to carry that over in when we did the updates in the recent amendments to IFRS for SMEs. To IFRS for SME. So we had a situation where there was a harder requirement in the IFRS for SMEs, which is meant for smaller private entities, than there was in the big book. And so when this was brought to our attention by our advisory group, we debated it at this meeting, and we decided to add a narrow scope standard setting project to introduce a consolidation exemption for the intermediate parents that have a parent or ultimate parent that is an investment entity and that does not produce consolidated financial statements. So long words, but the point is we're trying to align and simplify IFRS for SMEs with full IFRS. And we plan to start this project immediately by publishing an exposure draft so this can be effective at the same time the results of the third agenda consultation go effective for this literature. So stay tuned for that. So thanks very much for listening to our podcast for this month's meeting. Look forward to next month's updates. And for now, it's goodbye from the ISB.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifrs.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifrs.org, or find us on social media.